This is a Triple J podcast.
I think there can be a lot of anxiety and pressure if it feels like I can't rely on my body to match my level of want.
Hello, how are you doing? Dee Salwyn here for the Hookup Podcast. And you know, we talk about love, sex, dating, relationships. I have been part of the Hookup team now for nearly 7 years, which is crazy. And can you believe that we have never ever done, at least as far as I can remember, a whole episode on something called arousal non-concordance. Now, that might sound like something you've never heard before. It might sound a bit like a technical thing. Don't worry, we're going to explain exactly what it is in this app. But basically what you need to know is it's when your body and your mind, like say your body's turned on or your mind's turned on and they're not talking to each other. It's not matching. We're going to unpack that. But this is something that you might have experienced in your life and felt a lot of confusion around. It's something I know I have. And it's actually something I've read in a book I've mentioned quite a bit on the Hookup called Come As You Are by Emily Nagowski. So I'm really excited. We're going to do it with one of our favorite sexologists and psychologists, Laura Lee, who's in the studio with me now. Laura, hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Well, thank you for bringing this topic to our attention, because this is something that you messaged me about and you were like, hey, Dee, I've actually noticed that a lot of my clients are dealing with this. And I was like, Laura, we haven't done an episode on this. How have we not? So I thank you, and I'm really excited to delve into this.
Yeah, I am too. It deserves its whole on its own episode, I feel.
It really does. Okay, well, let's start at the very beginning. What is the definition of arousal non-concordance?
Yeah, I feel like you said it really beautifully. It is quite simply when that sort of physical response and our sort of subjective desire or want for the sex that we might be about to engage in or are engaging in, when that those responses don't kind of match up. It's essentially when what our body's doing in response to sexual stimuli and what our mind and heart and soul want are not lined up.
What's the difference between feeling mentally turned on and the body showing physical signs of arousal?
Yeah, I mean, they are just two totally different systems, and they're affected by very different sets of input. So that physiological arousal response that happens in response to sexual stimuli, so that's things like blood flow to the genitals, nipples hardening, heart rate increasing, lubrication of the vulva and vagina, erectile tissue in the penis, that kind of stuff, that is a very sensitive kind of reflex system, if you like. It's actually very sensitive to stimuli. So that kind of physiological response can happen. It doesn't necessarily mean it always will happen, but it can happen in response to sort of very light sexual stimuli. So we'll get into that. Versus being mentally turned on is, and you and I have talked about this before in this room, we've talked a bit about kind of libido and what goes into our desire or our want for sex. It's contextual, it's relational, it's occurring in sort of a life context that is affected by a million different things. So our subjective want or desire for sex is a totally different system, if you like, to what's happening physiologically.
So what causes that disconnect and the difference between being mentally turned on and not physically, or physically turned on but not mentally?
I mean, the disconnect is because they run as different systems. What that means is one can be kind of activating our accelerators, if you like, and one can be activating our brakes. So, for example, something can be happening that is resulting in some physiological arousal, such as, you know, maybe we're being touched in a certain way or we're touching ourselves in a certain way, but our mind might be stressed or busy or distracted. You know, I might have other things going on in my life, or I might be worried that someone's about to interrupt, or a million things could be happening contextually that could be kind of interfering from a sort of a mental, psychological, or emotional standpoint that could be kind of hitting the brakes and interfering. But over here, my body is experiencing something potentially pleasurable, potentially something wanted, and it might be kind of responding to that.
How common would you say it is? Because this was obviously, like we said, something you said you noticed a lot in your clients recently.
Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that it's pretty common for most people to experience at least on one occasion in their lives, right? If not multiple times. The reason it's so common is because the two systems, if you like, are actually somewhat weakly correlated. It's not that there's no correlation, but it's just not uncommon for them not to be perfectly matched up. I'm sure you can think of experiences, I know I can, where maybe I've wanted to engage sexually. I've been like willing and I want to and I feel good maybe with the person that I'm with, but I'm like, oh, I'm distracted or my body's not responding or my body's not like, I can't drop into my body or I can't relax or I'm disconnected from sensation. I can think of a million times where that's happened to me. So those systems take some effort for us to tune into and help to give them a fighting chance at being lined up, if you like.
Yeah, I feel like the main time it happens for me is probably cycle related, mm-hmm. Which people are probably so sick of hearing me talk about. But like in luteal, I find that it's not as easy for me to be physically aroused, but I mentally might be.
Yeah.
Or it might be, yeah, the opposite. It might be like, I'm ovulating or something and I'm really aroused, but then like you said, I'm stressed or things are happening or I just don't have the capacity.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, the most common would be stress that I can recognize wanting to be close to my partner or recognize what I know about sex and orgasm being wonderful for stress relief. I can know that stuff and have willingness and want. But my body might be on guard for other stuff. It's spent the day in this kind of hyperactive, anxious state. Mm. I cannot be expected to just to drop into kind of fall into bed and drop into my body and suddenly just be totally relaxed and receptive to sensation. That's probably not a realistic goal.
How common is it across different body types? Like with people with penises, is it more common or is it more common with vulvas? Or?
Yeah, most of the research tells us that it's slightly more common for people with vulvas, but again, not disproportionately enough that I would sort of call that out necessarily. And I know from experience with my own clients, plenty of experiences for people with penises who experience this. But yeah, the research tells us slightly more common for people with vulvas.
I would assume just because of the chats that we've previously done about arousal, that maybe for people with penises that they might physically turn on quicker, but maybe like the disconnect is mentally. As in like the blood flows to the penis quite quickly if it's touched or whatever, or it's more sensitive.
Yeah, that can absolutely happen. And I guess what I also see with the couples that I work with is that there's a lot of emphasis placed on the penis being erect, probably a little bit for kind of the reasons you just said, right? Is we have this probably this assumption that the penis is very sensitive to sexual stimuli. And if I'm somebody engaging sexually with someone with a penis and that penis doesn't seem to be getting erect, you can imagine what I might start to overlay about what I think that means about their level of desire for me, my level of attractiveness, their level of interest in having sex with me. Like I apply a lot of meaning potentially, and I see this with my clients a lot of meaning to whether or not the penis is hard. And that is probably one of the ways in which I'm seeing this show up for my clients more and more.
Yeah, people really don't know much about the disconnect, like including myself, because when you hear people talk about sex, like when people say like, oh my God, you're so wet, like you must be so turned on. And it's like, what? Like,
yeah,
I'm just chilling. Like I'm actually not. But you're like, all right, I'll go along with that.
Yeah. You're like, yes.
Sure. That's so it, turned on. Yeah. But yeah, why are we always so like societally, why are we so obsessed with this idea of making sure we're seeing the full physical signs?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think I can understand why we like it and seek it out, right? It's really kind of a very tangible, very visible way of signaling that we think it's signaling rather that I'm into this or my partner's into this. So if I'm in the room with, you know, someone and there is a really hard penis or there is a really lubricated vagina, I can see why I'd be like, why someone could maybe make the connection there that like, oh, this person's really turned on, as you said. And it's even part of our dirty talk, isn't it? Where we might be like, you know, I'm so wet for you, or I'm so hard for you or whatever. And so there's this real kind of connotation of like, this is signaling to you how much I want this. And I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that. It's just, as I said, what we then apply to what meaning we then apply in the absence of those things.
Yeah, how can people assuming physical arousal automatically mean someone wants sex be harmful if we think about consent?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I do really want to kind of make sure that is outlined very clearly here. It is very normal and very common, in fact, not just normal, but actually very common for the body to respond with physiological arousal like erect penis or vaginal lubrication, even when the sex is unwanted and even when it's completely and wholly non-consensual. And that can be really confusing for people and really distressing for people. But I definitely want to make that point very clearly that the presence of those physiological arousal signs, number one, don't indicate that anybody wants what is happening. And number two, as a partner, cannot be relied upon as indicators for consent. They really can't. So I think that's a really important point that I want to make here and why it can be harmful to conflate the idea of physiological arousal being indicative of this is wanted. There is subjective desire here when it's simply not always the case.
You can see it sometimes in like conversations that happen around sexual assault with people with penises.
Yeah.
And it's always this idea of like, oh, well, like you came or you were hard or you know what I mean? And it changes, I guess, some people's perception of, well, can you really call that assault?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it really has historically changed people's perception, and also for the person involved has been really confusing around, well, what messages was I sending? But there, I want to be really clear about this. Like, there is no confusion here that our want for sex is a subjective, complex, contextual experience that only we can know, and how our body is responding just is not relevant in that regard to our subjective want for the experience that we are having.
You're so right about how people can feel confused and shame.
Yeah.
Why is that a common experience for people when their body reacts in a way that doesn't match how they feel? I know that that's something that I've experienced as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there really can be shame here because people can feel really, really let down by their body, and it feels kind of out of control and confusing. You know, if I am saying I want this and I'm not experiencing some physiological responses that I expect would happen if I'm turned on and want this, what does that mean? What does that mean about maybe me or the person I'm with, or like, what am I not doing enough of? Like, it can really shift into this blame space. And I see this with my clients, particularly if there is a partner who is distressed by this. So for example, if I work with clients where at least one of the people involved has a penis, and that penis doesn't always experience an erection, and the person with the penis often isn't necessarily particularly bothered by that. They're like, I still feel great. I'm still getting lots of pleasure. I still want you very much. And the other partner is distressed. The other partner is feeling like, well, you can't want me, or you used to always get hard, or if you're not hard, what does that mean? Or you can't really want this that much. So I think that can create a lot of turmoil and a lot of shame for most people. It's like, how do I really trust that you want this and want me and are turned on by me if I don't have this kind of physical evidence? I then have to trust your word and your actions, and like, oh, that's hard because normally that's hard for me to do because normally I would trust these other things, but they weren't reliable indicators in the first place.
How do you deal with those feelings?
Yeah, I think that's a really unlearning of some very old scripts, because that's a really old ingrained idea that I think a lot of us grew up with. You know, if I take that example I was just working with, the presence of an erect penis means X, you know, it means the person who's turned on, they desire me, I'm desirable, I'm sexy, whatever it is. So it's about unlearning and relearning some new scripts, unlearning. And it almost always is when it comes to shame and sex, I find. There is this unlearning of old internalized ideas that when I start to say out loud and put words to them as an adult self, I kind of can step back from them and go, oh, they're actually incompatible with what I know about the world now. They're not actually true, and I know them not to be true anymore. And I can start to overlay some new messaging here. And I also find, you know, when I'm working with clients on this issue, it can be helpful to really help the other partner put words to, so particularly if I'm talking about like the person with the penis who's maybe not always experiencing an erection, I will help that person really put words to their want and desire for sex with their partner in new and fresh ways that the person can really receive and hear as true. So I will really help them tap into the emotion of why they want to engage sexually with their partner, what it means to them, what they get from it. This is not just about, sex is not just about genital pleasure. It's not. If it was, frankly, we'd probably just masturbate, right? Because it's heaps quicker and easier. Yeah, I get there a lot quicker and easier usually, right?
Totally.
That's what people tell me. So if I'm going to bother involving a partner, I'm probably getting a range of other like gorgeous emotional needs met. And that's what I help people put words to. Like, and that helps to dial down the intensity, and it doesn't matter so much anymore about how wet someone is or how hard someone is.
Because like you said, it's not just maybe you dealing with shame if you're the person who's physically not responding, but the other person involved, the people involved are also probably whatever scripts they're telling you, their stories they're telling themselves. Mm. What else can it bring up for people? Like, for example, that, you know, maybe pressure to perform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there can be a lot of anxiety and pressure if it feels like I can't rely on my body to match my level of want for sex, right? And once that's happened, it doesn't have to happen to us very often. Once that's happened to us once or twice, it can really seep in to future sexual experiences where I'm now concerned about, is my body going to respond the way I want it to? And of course, as you can imagine, what happens if I'm in my head and worried about my body not responding? Probably my body's not going to respond, right? It's like now I'm in my head and I'm distracted and I'm feeling a lot of pressure and anxiety. And you can imagine how that translates into interfering with that physiological arousal response. And why, when I work with people who have trouble, say, for example, getting an erection, and that if they're distressed by that, so often we start with that that messaging, that anxiety, the as you go to maybe commence, say, you know, some sort of intercourse or penetration and you lose that erection, what's happening for you internally? It's very rarely purely physiological, this stuff. It's so often like, what's my brain telling me? What's my anxiety looking for?
What should you do in those moments? And especially if you're someone maybe with a vulva, it's like, do you just, you know, if you are really turned on, like, do you just grab lube? Do you kind of keep going? Like, what do you recommend doing other things if maybe you're not? Because we know that it can take up to 20 to 30 minutes for a vulva to be fully aroused if penetration's what you're wanting. So maybe it's, doing other things.
I really like to do a couple of things here. I really like to help people slow down. People are having sex in such a rush. And as you said, it can take many, many minutes, particularly for someone with a vulva, to achieve a sufficient level of arousal for them to really access that pleasure and, in fact, have a chance in hell of having an orgasm. That takes time. That takes slowness to build. So I really like to help people slow down. It can be helpful to decenter penetration. I think that's always helpful. That can create a lot of pressure for people. And I also think it can be really helpful. You know, I was saying before about like the mental side of sex is so contextual, right? There's so much in our lives day to day and in our relationships and in our physical health and mental health and body image. There's so much that are going to be hitting those accelerators, making it easy for us to get turned on. And also so many things that are going to hit those brakes. So I love to help people work on their kind of context around sex. What context gives them the best chance of pleasure showing up? That is something that I think all of us have some ability to manage. We all have things within our control that we can do to help activate our accelerators and mitigate the impact of our brakes.
It honestly is really worth doing that work. Mm. But it takes a while because you have to really reflect and think and be present in yourself and your body and your mind and be like, all right, why am I distracted right now? Or why am I not feeling connected to my body? Yeah. Why is there a mismatch? Or what's the context of when do I feel the most turned on and aroused?
And it's interesting that you say that because, I do think it's some work to notice that about ourselves. And, you know, if you want to kind of a sort of shortcut to starting to do that reflection, I often get people to reflect on sex that stands out as like a really positive sexual encounter and get them to think about some of the context around that, like what was happening for you around that. But actually, you might be surprised to find that some of the contextual things that would really help you manage your accelerators and brakes are actually not that difficult. So, you know, I think I've talked to you before that like one of the biggest breaks for me is if I'm cold. I am cold.
I think about that sometimes. I don't know why. I think about it way more than I should think about it.
No,
it's more just like it's hearing you say that yeah. made me aware that that's something that I actually okay. don't like.
Okay.
It's got like you. Really interesting because I like sometimes it's like, why isn't this happening? And it's yeah. like, because well, my feet are cold.
Because I'm cold.
Yeah.
And when we are cold, like our bodies can't relax. It's distracting. Once you notice you're cold, you almost can't unnotice it till you've resolved it. So that's a super easy fix, isn't it? Easy fix with blankets or a heater or whatever. So you can like... Some of the brakes and accelerators will be big. I get that. You know, parenting, young children can hit the brakes for all sorts of reasons. Sleep deprivation, lack of privacy, all this kind of stuff. So this is not, they're not always going to be as simple as heating and cooling. I understand that. But there will be some that are like less effortful. And putting that effort in is going to really increase the chances of you being able to kind of drop into your body, experience pleasure, and have a really pleasurable experience that I think is our best chance of both desire and pleasure getting to arrive, frankly.
What would those simple things do you recommend starting with?
The contextual things?
Yeah.
So I have an exercise actually on my website, and it goes through these four different domains, right? So the four domains I get people to look at are individual. So that's like physical, mental health, body image, relational. So like, do I actually fancy and like the person that I could potentially have sex with, and how are we getting along and all of that kind of stuff. The third one is kind of lifestyle. So that can be things like point in time stuff. That could be things like stress or financial worries, grief, parenting, that kind of stuff. And then the fourth domain is environmental, as we were just talking about, temperature, lighting, privacy, time, a playlist, that kind of stuff. And I get people to go through those four domains and start to map out their accelerators and brakes. You know, so some of them will be really easy, like we were talking about their temperature. Some of them might be like the sleep deprivation. Deprivation stuff I mentioned before. If I've got a dynamic with my partner that's, you know, in a period in our relationship where we're feeling kind of disconnected and that's a bit of a break. So rather than trying to like rush into sex, maybe it's about what can we do to build some connection before we go to bed, that kind of stuff. That's what I get people to work through, these kind of accelerators and breaks across those different domains. And it starts to kind of bring to the surface what is my sort of pleasure context. And then you can imagine I'm doing this with people who then also have a partner. So I get their partner to do it too. So now you're a team kind of co-creating a pleasure context, and you might find you can help each other activate your accelerators and mitigate your breaks. So, you know, when I discovered being cold was a break for me, what do you think my partner did? He got like the world's biggest oil heater for our bedroom, right? So he's like, if I can mitigate
can
that break.
Can I have a single
he's
breeze?
Like, yeah, he's like sweating in our bedroom, but he's like, I'll survive so that you're not cold, right? So you might find as a team, you can really help each other with your accelerators and mitigate the impact of your breaks in a way that kind of creates a space where you both have a chance at pleasure.
What if there are things that are a bit harder to change, like if you are someone who has been experiencing pain?
Yeah.
Maybe that's like endo or mm-hmm. something else, and then or if you're on antidepressants.
Absolutely.
Which those kind of contexts are, I guess, a bit harder to navigate.
So, and that was why you might have noticed in my words there, I said mitigate the impact of breaks, not erase breaks. I don't think that's a realistic goal at all. So we're talking mitigate the impacts. And the other thing you heard me say there was access to pleasure. So when I'm talking access to pleasure, I'm actually using that term pretty broadly. I'm not even just talking about sexual pleasure. So if someone is, of course, experiencing pain upon penetration, then of course I don't want that person having penetrative sex right now. And in fact, if they've just attempted it and it's been painful and maybe they've gotten a fright, maybe that's been distressing, and maybe what would be most pleasurable for them right now is like a snack in bed or to have a warm shower together or to watch a comfort show together or to have, you know, their hair stroked. And I would consider that like a wonderful, pleasurable experience to have in that moment. And that to me still feels connective, aspirational, pleasurable. So those words I was using before, I was choosing my words very deliberately because I think that's an important reframe rather than what's the context I can set up to rush to an orgasm as quickly as possible, because that's not a helpful frame for anyone.
I love that so much. Mm. What are some ways that people can check in with their partners around desire versus physical response, especially if we're thinking in the context of consent, you know? Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. I sometimes get people to talk to each other about this through a framework of like, willingness. So it becomes about, are you willing to kind of be, and of course people will use their own language here, how they feel comfortable, but it's something along the lines of like, do you feel open to being in an erotic space with me tonight, or connecting sexually tonight? And that partner might be then able to choose some words that feel really like honors where they're at, which might be like, I'm not feeling like in the least bit turned on right now, but I want to be close to you. So like, let's go have a shower together, or let's go have a naked cuddle together. And I'm of course willing to just see what happens next. So that we're creating space for someone, lots of space for someone to be able to put words to what they want and don't want. I firmly believe when it comes to consent, we all have this responsibility to be really easy to say no to. And I don't care how long you've been with someone, I think that really stands. And I think about that a lot in the context of my clients and even in my own relationship. Am I making this, you know, with my partner, am I making this really easy for him to put words to what he might feel like, which might be, I'm really tired, can we just have a cuddle and go to bed? So I think about that a lot, and that is the language I invite people to use in their own relationships, is less about propositioning someone that they then have to commit and say yes or no to, because you'll probably get lots of no's. If I'm someone that's really easy to say no to and create a lot of space for someone and just invite someone into a space of willingness, I'll probably find a lot of the time someone's willing to meet me in that space.
What should people think about in the actual acts itself? Like if you are, you know, having sex and doing things, yeah, and making sure you're not just taking like a hard penis or like, yeah, a lubricated vagina or whatever as like, oh, this is like okay to go, you,
yeah,
know?
Yeah, I think there's a lot here that I think is really cut through when we are able to communicate our desires and preferences quite directly. And, you know, even when I was coming here to talk to you, Dee, I even said to my own partner, just on reflection on this topic, I even said to him, is it pleasurable for you if I touch your penis and it's not hard? Like, what is that like? And I realized I didn't even really know what that was like for him. And he was like, yeah. And we talked about how and like, what is pleasurable? And I was like, gosh, like even we hadn't had that conversation. So, and that like taught me a lot, that 5-minute conversation of like, is that still pleasurable? Because I realized I might have made the assumption that he didn't want me to do that. Maybe he wanted me to move away from his penis if it wasn't erect. Maybe he didn't want attention drawn to the unerect penis. You know, I probably had all these assumptions in my head that he was like, nah, all still feels great. Like, so I think there's something to be said for really having that very direct communication. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of also doing that outside the bedroom as well as in it. So there's probably lots to be gained from sharing a resource like this podcast with your partner and saying, you know, saying to your partner something like what I said, you know, is that pleasurable for you? Do you still like that? But in the moment, I'm not convinced it needs to be much different. Does that feel good? Do you want me to keep going and taking a yes or a no and then moving on? And as I said before, been really easy to say, to give that feedback to. So if I'm touching my partner and he says, and I say, does that feel good? And he's like, actually, can we switch it up to this? And I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'm not pouting or sulking or withdrawing or getting panicked that I did something wrong. I'm just like, yeah, no worries. Let's mix it up.
I think it's so incredible that even you, someone who works in this space, is so qualified, is only just having these convos.
Yeah.
And I think that really shows that, like, this was such an important episode to do because
absolutely,
the whole time I'm going, oh, my God, yes. Like, we do, like, even on an unconscious, subconscious level, think about the physical thing being like, oh, my God, hard, yes.
Yeah.
Or, like, and it's, like, just such a nice reminder, I think, for everyone listening to be like, hang on, this – we should be constantly checking in and having these conversations because, it is so common to have the disconnect with the body and the mind.
Yeah, so common. Yeah, I think we can all expect to experience it if we haven't already. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And I know you're probably going to say absolutely yes to this, but if people are struggling with this and want to get external help and some more guidance around navigating, you know, maybe that disconnect, chat to sexologists, sex therapists.
Yeah, I think that can be really helpful. I hope resources like this and sharing these with each other too, like sharing these with your partner and starting to have those conversations, starts to open up those kind of communication kind of pathways if they're not open already. But yeah, if needing professional help, there's sexologists and sex therapists out there that can really help you have these conversations, but also guide you with some of the other parts of this that we've talked about today. Like if you aren't feeling super connected to your body's response, or if you're not feeling confident that you can read that in yourself or in your partner, absolutely there's things we can do to help.
Thank you, Laura. We'll put all the resources that we have around the work that you do are in our show notes as well.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing this to our attention.
My pleasure.